I thought for so long that I didn't have anything of value to say, because many times in the HR world, you are the minority voice on an executive team, and everyone is telling you that you are wrong, and you get imposter syndrome and you second guess, and it can feel very easy to doubt yourself and think, okay, I clearly must not know what I'm talking about. I don't have anything of value to say. But I have to say, as soon as I started sharing my perspectives on LinkedIn, suddenly there was a whole flood of community validating my thoughts and saying, me too, and I thought I was alone. And so thought leadership aids is a really scary, nuanced thing, but really everyone has thought leadership within them. Just speak your mind, share what your thoughts are. You'll learn a lot.
Welcome to the Learn Podcast, where we interview top leaders in tech and learn about how they're building the world's most innovative companies. I'm Tep Losser, CEO and co-founder of WorkRamp, the world's first learning cloud platform. Our mission is to help professionals reach their full potential through learning, and the Learn Podcast is where we can learn from the best leaders at the top of their game. Please subscribe, leave us a rating, and we hope you enjoy the episode.
What's up, everybody? We are at our Learn Live podcast, and we're going live here. We have Melanie Naranjo. Just to let you know, I lost my voice a little bit, Melanie. So it's going to be a rough show on my voice, but I'm excited for a conversation. But thanks for joining us here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited. And what a good vibe and energy there is today.
How are you liking HR Transform so far?
Loving it so much, meeting so many great people. It's always so much fun connecting with customers and other HR partners. It's just such a blast.
That's awesome. Well, we announced our partnership yesterday, so it's super cool. Yeah. For those of you who don't know, we just announced a WorkRamp and Athena partnership, so you can now get Athena content directly within WorkRamp. So you have it now combined in your LMS. They have some of the best content in the world for compliance. And so we're super excited about the partnership, and thanks for doing that with us.
Yeah, absolutely. So glad to partner with you to broaden our reach and just to work with such a great company like WorkRamp.
So if you're interested in compliance content, go check that out. But we'll jump into the main agenda today. We have a fun agenda to talk through your background, your thoughts on people leadership. We'll throw in a few questions around LinkedIn as well, too, because you're such a LinkedIn influencer. So this is going to be really fun. But get us kicked off. Tell us about you, your background, before we get started, so we can understand where you're coming from.
Yeah. So my name is Melanie, as you mentioned. I head up the people team at Athena. I've been in HR my whole career, but I've been in a couple different industries. I started in the fashion industry of all places. I did a couple of internships at Coach, the handbag company. And then I worked my way into media, which is a whole different ballgame. I was a business insider for a while. And now I've switched down in size of company to Athena, which has been really, really great. Because I have to say, there's something very unique about working at a startup where you can sort of break things and experiment and just move really, really quickly.
Well, you gave me a fun fact earlier. You speak a little bit of Mandarin Chinese as well, too.
I don't know if Bukachi and Yumeo quite count, but you know, there you go.
Yeah. Well, I speak a little Mandarin too myself, but we should practice afterwards.
Let's do it. Tai Gui La. That was the thing I remember the most.
All right. The first question I want to ask you is around actually your LinkedIn presence. We were just talking about this post you wrote this morning that went viral. Let's talk about that for a second as well, too. But the general question is around, there's so many HR professionals that are trying to build up their thought leadership online, on LinkedIn. You've done an amazing job. I think you had over 40,000 followers. I'm at a meager like 15,000 or below, if that.
That's great.
But walk us through your thoughts on essentially LinkedIn thought leadership, and then we'll jump into actually your posts from today as well.
Sure. Thought leadership is such a tough thing because I think you kind of have to look at the broader context of HR, which is, this is a field that has been so focused on risk mitigation for so long that HR professionals are really scared to speak up because so much of what we have to do is confidential in nature. And it's very scary to say something and maybe, you know, it gets misconstrued or it's taken out of context or you inadvertently share something you weren't supposed to share. And so I think a lot of HR professionals for a long time, you didn't see them posting on LinkedIn. They didn't want to be public in that way. But, you know, what I'm finding is that these are topics that need to be talked about. People wish that HR professionals would talk about it more. Other HR professionals wish that they could feel seen and validated by other HR professionals. And also, I'll just say this from my personal experience. I thought for so long that I didn't have anything of value to say because many times in the HR world, you are the minority voice on an executive team. And everyone is telling you that you are wrong. And you get imposter syndrome and you second guess. And it can feel very easy to doubt yourself and think, okay, I clearly must not know what I'm talking about. I don't have anything of value to say. But I have to say, as soon as I started sharing my perspectives on LinkedIn, suddenly there was a whole flood of community validating my thoughts and saying, me too, and I thought I was alone. And so thought leadership is this really scary, nuanced thing, but really everyone has thought leadership within them. Just speak your mind, share what your thoughts are. You'll learn a lot.
Can you break down your process maybe one level deeper?
Yeah. Like,
for example, for me, I've been tinkering around with Saturdays. I have 4 hours to really think through what I want to do. I'm curious, do you have like a unique way or a unique recommendation you would give to the audience on how to actually come up with great content?
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to just be so direct and say, I think that where people go wrong is that they spend too much time trying to figure out what they think will go viral or what they think people want to hear about. I think that if you do that and you're sort of looking at other posts that have done really well, you're already in the wrong direction. That post has been done. People already have that opinion. They don't need to hear it anymore. What they want to hear is something unique. What they want to see is something that they haven't seen before. I've talked to a lot of people who are curious about this, and they say, like, oh, I kind of have this idea, but I don't know. I don't see anybody else talking about it. Yeah, good. Write that. That's what you should write. So I think my advice would be genuinely write the things that you are thinking in your day-to-day life. Don't try to go out beyond that and figure out what people want. Pay attention to your own thoughts throughout the day. Pay attention to a difficult moment that you had. Pay attention to something that got you really excited. Write about that. And don't think about what does somebody else want to hear. Really write about the thing. I promise you, other people are feeling and thinking what you are thinking, and they want to see it validated.
Speaking of, you wrote a great post this morning.
Oh, yeah.
We were looking at it, went viral. Since it's out in the open, can we talk a little bit about the post, your take on it? You have it live now.
So. Yeah.
You want to hear your take on it?
Yeah. I wrote about a really tricky topic that most HR professionals would never post about, and I have all the empathy in the world. I questioned myself. I was like, Melanie, are you really going to post this? I scheduled it, and I went to bed, and I was like, what will be, and then I woke up in the morning, and it had like 500 likes, and I was like, oh, great, okay. I wrote about terminations, and I wrote about how much they suck from the HR perspective, and I just said, this is not fun for us all. Like, it's not fun for us. I know that it might feel like we're cold and heartless and it doesn't matter to us. No, it's horrible. It's horrible, but we're not talking about it. This is not about us. It's about this employee who's going through a 10 times worse experience than we are. And it was just very fascinating to see so many other HR professionals respond and sort of say, yeah, I've been feeling this way, but I didn't have an outlet to talk about this because I didn't want to make it about me. And it's just really helpful to give HR professionals a voice and let them know they're not alone.
We had a panel yesterday with the CPO of SurveyMonkey. And one of the things we talked about is the HR leader always has to show up positive. They always have to put on the brave face, but they also need breaks. They also need pep talks as well, too. They also need coaching. It's the same exact scenario, too, where, yes, layoffs are extremely hard for everybody. But also, you do have to remember, it's also another human's job to do that. HR professionals, it's tough to do as well, too. So I'm glad you brought some voice to the discussion.
Thank you. So. Certainly, it's the kind of post that I would like to see out in the world. And so I'm happy if I can help provide that for someone else.
Cool. All right. So we'll move on from LinkedIn. But if you have more LinkedIn questions, I'm sure they could send them over to you because you're the LinkedIn pro. And I have more questions. Well, let's get to some HR topics, too.
Sure, yeah.
So when I actually went through a few of your viral posts, you had a really good post on leadership development. A lot of us think about leadership development as kind of your fluffy course you have to take once you become a manager, but you were diving into all the other things that leaders don't really get training on. But give us your view on leadership development as it stands today, and what do you think companies are potentially missing?
Okay, so I think this is a very timely question because right now the reality is that the economy is not doing so hot. And as most HR professionals know, anyone who's been in the business for a while knows, when times are great, the sort of piggy banks open, the openness to things like employee experience initiatives open, DEI open. When times are tough and money is tight, the purse strings really tighten. We cut down on a lot of people initiatives. The focus is not there. And I think tied into that, what we are seeing on the performance management front, understandably, is that employers want to make sure that every penny is going as far as possible. And that comes to a topic like talent density, right? Yep. So you want to make sure that you are maximizing the cost of every employee. Employees are expensive. Every company's most expensive asset. It's not your vendors. It's not your marketing. It's none of that. Your employees are literally your most expensive asset. And so you want to make sure that every employee is going to perform. What happens when the economy is tough, because now it's tied into money, is people try to tighten the reins, really, really control things, really focus on inputs instead of outputs. So instead of focusing on, are you getting your job done? What is the quality and quantity of your work? people start focusing on the things that they feel that they can control, something easier to control, like how many hours are you working? Are you working in the office or are you working outside of the office? How are you doing this thing? Are you doing it my way or are you doing it your way? And so to answer your question, I think we're in this really precarious period right now where managers are really being told to be super prescriptive. I want you to fill out this 9-page rubric of performance and make sure that you can prove that every employee is doing everything that they can do. And if they're not, I want you to manage them out right away. And I want to make sure that you're telling me how many hours this person is working. And I saw that they weren't available at this time. They were at a doctor's appointment. How hard are they working? I think what we need to see more of is equipping managers with the tools they need to succeed, but not telling them how to do it. Giving them the tools and then setting them free. And I'll give an example. A lot of times people talk about this very high level. It's like, thanks, Melanie, but how do I actually do that? Let me be more specific. At Athena, we equip our managers with 3 questions. And we have our managers ask themselves these 3 questions of their teams every quarter. If I could go back in time, knowing what I know today, would I hire this employee again? If this person were to turn in their resignation today, how would I feel? Panicked? Relieved? Neutral? And ultimately, is this person making my job easier or harder? Those are the only 3 questions you need to ask because they're focused on outputs. What is the value, ultimately, that this employee is bringing? If the value is high based on these questions, you're good. We don't need to talk. If the value is low, it's time to have a conversation. I'm not saying it's time to fire someone. It's time to have a conversation about where things are going wrong. Why are the inputs not equating to the outputs that we are looking for?
Do you feel like, because you meet with a lot of customers,
yes.
Do you feel like the state of leadership development is subpar today and has been exacerbated by the new hybrid work environments? Or do you feel like it's the best you've seen it and it's only going to get better? Like, where do you think it is on the spectrum? Because you've been in people leadership for a while now.
Yeah.
So what's the state of the world for you personally?
So I think right now is one of those times when we're probably going to start to see a dip right now because the economy is so tough that people are getting scared. And when people are scared, they optimize for risk mitigation. They don't optimize for achieving on your goals. That's just the fact of the thing. If you think about like a company who is in a tough spot, maybe they've got bad optics. Are they going to now take risks? No, they're going to try and do everything they can to be quiet, out of the news, right? And so it's a similar thing with performance management. If we're trying to like really tighten the purse strings and make sure that every employee is doing everything perfect, we're not going to take a risk on, oh, let's hire this creative employee and see where they take us. No. You got to follow our things by the rule. I think for the record, that is the wrong approach. We will see many employers do that until the economy spikes up again.
Got it. Last question on this topic.
Yeah.
If you could choose one thing to give a recommendation on to make your leaders better, then it could be things like training as an example or better executive leadership. What would you choose for companies that say, you know what? Our people leadership's weaker than I like at many levels, first and second line leadership. And I want to improve that. What's the one tip you would maybe give people leaders?
Bring them into the discussion. Bring your managers into the discussion. A lot of times what happens is these conversations around challenges that the business is facing happen in a silo at the executive level. They make a decision and then they say, managers, execute. What they don't do is say, managers, can you help us? We're having this issue. Please ask this one question of all your direct reports and report back to us on what trends you're finding. Here's the challenge we're having. Help us bring your suggestions to the table. Managers can only do with the tools that you give them. If you're not equipping them any tools, it's sort of like telling someone, build a house, but I'm not going to give you any tools to do it, but go get it done. So I would say bring people into the fold, make them part of the discussion.
Great tip.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to shift gears to another topic. We actually talked about this day one of the HR Transform Conference was all about HR's role now in driving performance in the organization. Mm-hmm. We're talking about Athena specifically, you guys are a small and mighty team doing a lot with the size of team you have.
Super
talented.
So
I'm assuming you're building performance into the culture.
Yeah.
And historically, HR, you know, has been focused on culture and maybe some of the fluffier administrative things. And we're seeing the rise of the CHRO as almost your COO, part CFO, part chief of staff. So give us your take on how do you drive performance within the culture itself?
How do I drive performance within the culture itself? Well, I think it starts with defining what performance is and what your performance culture at your company is. Performance really is the value that each employee brings to the table. What is the ROI that you are getting for each employee? If the ROI is low, you have low performance standards. If you have the ROI is high, you've got high performance standards and high performing employees. Really, it starts with having that conversation. when we did this at Athena, because transparently, and I've talked about this actually, when I came in, we said we had a high performance culture, but it wasn't true. What was happening was we had employees who were struggling and we weren't holding them accountable because we were being quote unquote nice. Like, oh, you know, but they're trying really hard, or like, oh, you know, but I really like them. But that's not why we hired them, right? We hired them to bring high value to the company. And so for the record, like when I say it that way, it sounds so harsh. Obviously, it's part of a bigger discussion. And that's sort of what I want to get at, which is when we realize like, ooh, we are actually not holding our employees accountable to the high standards that we said we would. It's time for us to correct that mistake and own that mistake and explain to our employees why. So it wasn't employees, get your acts together. It was employees, we've made a mistake. We've let you down by not being clear about our standards and by not having these conversations with you sooner. Let's walk you through why it's so important that we maintain high performance standards as a fast growing startup.
Hey everyone, I want to take a quick commercial break and tell you about the company that produces this podcast. I co-founded WorkRamp back in 2015, and our mission has always been the same, to help professionals reach their full potential through learning. As part of that mission, we've built the world's first learning cloud, an all-in-one platform for your employee, partner, and customer learning needs. If your company is looking for a learning management system, also known in the industry as an LMS, we'd love to talk to you. You can reach us at our website, workramp.com, or you can even email me directly at ted@workramp.com, and I'll get you in touch with our team. Hope you're enjoying the episode, and back to the show.
You know, I think a lot of startups miss the accountability piece. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like, I think they're doing a good job, so I'm going to say they're high performing.
Yeah.
But you don't really know how to measure that. And people have done that through performance reviews, they've done that through OKRs, done it through many different methods. Have you found, not just at Athena, but even at Business Insider, or any previous roles you've had, ways to drive accountability that is, let's say, not draconian or too tough on the people?
I think there are two angles that are important. One is the buy-in angle, and then two is the execution. So the buy-in is making sure that employees are actually, they understand why this is so important and not arbitrary. And you just like, you know, again, being draconian, just like for the sake of pushing me harder, right? It's because as a company, especially as a startup, you've got limited funds, right? There's a certain amount of money that you've got in the piggy bank and you want to make that extend as long as possible. So that means every employee has to be driving as much high value as possible. Also, we know that high performance begets high performance. High performers don't want to work with underperformers because when they do, that means that they are carrying the weight of those underperformers. And so I think it's important to explain that, like, hey, here's why this is so important and why we're going to hold you accountable to these standards. The second part is the execution, and that's where your managers come into play. Mm. A lot of times I think people go wrong by, again, not incorporating their managers into that process. So they're just like, make it happen. I don't like what I saw that employee doing, even though I'm not their manager and I don't know the context, go fire them. That is not helpful. What is helpful is equipping your managers with the tools to identify underperformance themselves and then having them have that trust to come to you for help and knowing that when they come to you, you're not just going to say, oh, they're underperforming, fire them. No, if they come to you saying they're underperforming, great, let me help you figure out where the problem is and what we might be able to do to rectify the situation.
Again, driving it through managers is a big thing.
Managers are like the essential asset for performance management.
Yeah. Okay, cool. We're about to wrap up here with a couple more questions, but I want to shift gears to trends you're seeing. Maybe at this conference, you said you had a couple dinners with customers and maybe potential future customers. I'm curious, what are the biggest trends you're hearing coming to the fold right now within the people function? And I don't know if you have tips for those trends or if you just have trends that you're seeing that are top of mind for all the people leaders you're seeing at this conference as of today, March 13th, 2024.
You know what? It's so funny that you asked that and in the way that you word it, because the reality is I have been thinking about this quite a lot. And I'm going to look to the camera as I say this. The HR community is not doing so hot right now. People are really struggling. Everyone I'm talking to is just struggling with bad relationships with their CEO, not feeling valued. The executive team keeps cutting them off at every turn. There's a ton of politics. And I think, you know, in part, this comes from, again, tying to the economy. If you go to 2020, 2021, for the first time ever, or the first time in a long time that I've been aware of, HR teams were brought into the strategic fold. It was like, oh my gosh, we have to go remote. HR, fix the problem for us. Or HR, employees are not accepting our job offers. They want $1 million and they want all these benefits. How do we get them to stay and join? It was in the employees' favor. It is now an employer market and things have shifted dramatically. And as I mentioned early on, that's when the purse strings tighten. That's when a lot of those traditionally people initiatives get seen as less important. Now, for the record, I think that there's a lot of opportunity and onus on the people function to be able to communicate in more business terms to win people over. But anyway, with that aside, you know, what I think HR people are really struggling with is it was so easy to get money for employee initiatives before. It was so easy to get someone to give me strategic power before. And now that's being taken away. And so I think people professionals are really, really struggling with that. My tips here are, I'm going to word it this way and I'll give more context. Learn to speak to your audience and appeal to them in the ways that would appeal to them, not in the ways that would appeal to other HR professionals. I see this so many times where an HR professional comes to me and they say, Melanie, can you believe that I told them about this and the turnover rates are so high and like how terrible this is for morale? And they didn't get it. And I said, listen, everything you said, I'm buying it. But you know why I'm buying it? It's because I'm in the people function and I understand that this is code language for drop in revenue, drop in employee effectiveness, drop in ability to acquire top talent. Your CEO, your CRO, they're not connecting those dots and you're not connecting the dots for them. You need to talk about it in terms of money. Hey, I noticed that we didn't hit our ARR goal last quarter. You know why we didn't hit our ARR goals last quarter? Because of bad management. You know how I know that? Because this person flubbed this deal because they didn't know about this thing and they didn't make the offer because no one trained them on it. You know what could fix that? Some money for management training. But that's not what HR professionals say.
If you start a conversation with, hey, we need to buy this tool. CEO just tunes out or CFO is like, I'm done.
It's not happening.
You start with, we lost $1 million deal because of this.
Yeah.
And draw that conclusion. Yep. So, great tip. All right. Last question. Then we'll go to the learn lightning round.
Oh, I love it.
But we have to talk about compliance. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Athena's compliance provider has some of the best content in the world like we talked about.
Thank you.
Give us the state of how HR professionals look at the compliance category. It's obviously a mandatory thing we have to do, but what's been wrong in the industry and how are you looking to fix it?
Great question. And I will caveat this with what I think is a fun story. I literally quit my last job because I was so impressed by Athena's products. I remember being part of the interview process and I was like, I love the people, very smart. But you know, I was at my last company for going on 7 years. It was a big decision. They sent me a sample of the training and I was like, done.
In the offer letter.
In the offer letter. Like, wait, Melanie.
You have to take this training before you
Sign. Okay, so to answer your question, I think that compliance training is a hugely undervalued missed opportunity in the people world. And here's why. I'll be so real with you. Is compliance the reason that most people professionals wake up in the morning? You know, is this why we join the HR profession? No, I don't wake up and say, I'm so excited to then roll out harassment prevention training. That's not why we joined the HR profession. But here's the thing. Compliance training is required. It is legally mandatory. Depending on your state, right, you must assign 2 hours of harassment prevention training to your managers. Let me ask a question. I would like to pose a question to HR professionals, which is, when else will you get buy-in from your executive team, whether willing or unwilling?
I'm saying that even the CEO of Google or Apple has to take compliance training, right?
When else are you going to get mandatory government-enforced 2 hours of time and attention from your entire company, from your CEOs to your new hires? Never. Never. Compliance training could be check the box. It could be, oh gosh, we have to get this thing done. Or it could be, wait a second, I couldn't get budget for that management training. I couldn't get budget for that DEI provider, but I can get budget for harassment prevention. So why not go with a provider like Athena that is actually going to do more bang for your buck, is going to weave in DEI into the course training, is going to teach managers best practices on how to manage effectively. We weave in, for example, like gendered performance reviews. Gender tied into harassment prevention. I remember the demo, the sample they sent me was a comic strip of a queer Hispanic woman, A Day in the Life. I couldn't believe that this was harassment prevention training. It is. It qualifies. And not only does this required legal compliance training, it also pushes forward your agenda as a people leader. It builds social capital and trust with your employees.
Reminds me of your whole analogy is, remember when Starbucks shut down stores to do training?
Yes.
And like the whole world went nuts. They lost billions of dollars just to do like 2 hours of training.
Yes, I remember.
I guarantee you every minute there was highly utilized. And think about this, 2 hours with, could be Tim Cook at Apple to your new hire at Apple. Like you have 2 hours of their attention where they can't skip it. It's so key.
So, yeah, I think so.
So, all right, we're in my favorite part. It's called the rapid fire round.
Bring it on.
So the rapid fire round is I'm going to give you a few questions and prompts. Give me 1-2-line answers. Okay. Tisha, let's just get to know you a little bit more here too. All right, first one. What's your number one learning resource that you learned from, book, podcast? What's your number one?
Okay, I'm going to give the most dissatisfactory answer, but it's so true. I'd be lying if I said anything else. It's my employees. I really mean that. You can go out and read any book. You can go out and listen to any podcast. Although this podcast is a great one. Listen to this one, right?
Listen
to this one. But I have found that like that's all theoretical. That's all somebody else's problem. That's all knowledge that came from somebody else's set of experiences and perspectives. What you can't replicate is your own employees and what they're going through and what challenges they're bringing up. I have found that you can learn so much by just listening. And I really mean that for the record. A lot of times it's very hard. It's very hard when employees are complaining to you to build empathy, take a step back, be neutral. All my posts, they're things that I've observed from my employees, all of them.
Love it. Love it. That's a great source. You're spending all day with them, right?
I really am.
Most of your waking life with them. Mm-hmm. All right, what's the next one? What's the most exciting thing you've experienced at this conference so far?
Honestly, it's just making all these emotional connections. When I tell you that I've had people cry with me at this conference in the last few days, I've had people share these emotionally vulnerable stories that they just haven't had an outlet to share before. If you think about it, especially many people are in the startup world, they're a team of one. They have literally no one that they can confide in. Just the connections is the most exciting thing.
They were probably saying, it's the smoke. My eyes are tearing.
I got allergies. Somebody on your team was talking about allergies. Yeah, I hear you. Uh-huh.
All right. We have a two-part HR question.
Okay.
What do you think is the future of the HR profession over the next 3 to 5 years?
The future of the HR profession, I will say what I hope it is, being able to continue to lean into more strategic thought partnership, getting to really partner with employees, being more, and this is the key one, being more transparent, even just from an inclusivity perspective. Like, I'm the first person in my family to go to college, to enter the corporate workforce. Nobody taught me how terminations work. Nobody taught me how to ask for a performance review or an increase or a promotion. I think even like today's post where I talked about, this is what it feels like to terminate someone. It sucks, but here's what we do before it happens. That is so helpful to building trust with employees and helping them understand the story. If you tell them nothing, of course, in the absence of knowledge, they're going to fill the gaps with their own assumptions, often wrong and often not in your favor. I hope that the direction we go in is more transparent, more people professionals, just putting it out there.
Okay, great. We're both in HR tech, so I have to ask this question. What's the future of HR tech? 3 to 5 years.
Okay. I feel pretty strongly about this. For so long, we had no options. You had like a couple of people who had monopolies. Nobody cared about HR. So you were like, I guess I got these three options and there's no point in giving feedback. It's not going to go anywhere.
That's all you got to do.
Yep. So I think what I hope and what I believe the future will be is, you know, you see so many HR tech companies now starting up because especially, again, go back to the economy, when everything was in the employee's favor, anytime that happens, HR now has more buying power. So now you've got all these companies that have cropped up in the last 10 years, really. They're not that old, that are vying for our attention and forever. And by nature and by need, they're now getting better and meeting our demands. And so I think the future of HR tech is actually providing quality resources and tools for HR professionals.
Awesome. Great answer. Well, Melanie, thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
And so if you all want to listen and subscribe to the WorkRamp Learn podcast, go do so. And excited to have you on here. Excited for the partnership.
Thank you. Same here. Go take your Athena training off WorkRamp.
Thanks for listening to the Learn Podcast. If you're a fan of the podcast, do us two favors. One is subscribe to it so you can get the latest update of our most recent episodes. And two, write a short review of the podcast. This helps us get discovered in the broader podcast community. Thanks again.